You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 15 July. We've got China housing price index this morning down 3.2% year on year. Apart from May of 2023, it's been negative every month since May 2022. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Mateta Tulari from RMB. I want to touch on PMGs. The white metal prices held on. I was gone for whatever, 10 days, and I thought they might come back. They are definitely holding on. What's driving that? Sahil Martini, he is from 91. The end of the US dollar's 14-year up cycle. He says there's four boxes you need to tick, and all four are being ticked. And then Luvo Gray, the Trump tariff, the impact on our tech sector. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Shrinking JSC means growing problems for your investments. Portfolios are increasingly concentrated in very few large stocks. Business Day, ArcelorMittal South Africa's long steel business bailout stumbles. They say the unit is still in trouble despite help from the government. Morning markets, the US was green last night, the S&P up 0.1%, the Nasdaq a 0.33% higher. The East is green, Sydney a few points, 0.01% up, Tokyo and Hong Kong 0.1% higher, while Tencent is 0.2% up. Commodities are red, gold futures 3,364, Brent 6,889, platinum 1,419, while palladium $1,235 an ounce. The Rand 1787, Bitcoin 117,500, and top 40 opening call, green open 200 points or just under 0.25% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Mateta Tulari, head FX execution at RMB. Mateta, appreciate the early morning as always. PGM prices, I mean, they've given us a false hope many times over the last many years. This last move really does seem real. We've got platinum at decade highs. The charts are looking interesting. This time it does look like maybe all the talk around shortages, particularly in the platinum space, are playing through, and we're getting a move in PGMs. And by note of that, of course, the PGM miners.
Yeah, good morning, Simon. I mean, there's some research that estimates that about nearly one-sixth of global PGM production has been loss-making over the past year, which has been highlighting the persistent pressure on South African miners. It's also amazing how a year ago, you know, the major players in the local sector have been warning that, you know, the sharp drop in PGM basket prices, which decreased about, close to 40%, resulted in SA Platinum miners delaying projects, shutting mining shafts, some cutting capital expenditure projects, and also reducing the number of employees. I mean, we've seen that at the likes of Sibania. But now, it's amazing that also, you know, South Africa, as also the world's biggest platinum producer, we have been bearing the brunt of the PGM price slump, particularly, you know, as the PGM sector is one of the largest employers in the SA mining space. I mean, we've seen supply cuts since 2021 in both the primary and also the secondary output market, you know, driving a physical deficit across all PGM, markets. But now, a year later, the story is very different. PGMs are surging. They are quite an important driver in terms of the rand, in terms of trade. They contribute about 30% to the terms of trade volume compared to gold, which is around 11%. If you look at the commodity complex this year, gold is up 27%. Silver is up 32%. But platinum is up 40%. So You know, despite this recent price surge, I mean, there's a lot of analysis that suggests that potential headwinds for platinum, you know, is going to continue, including the fact that there is a supply-demand balance. There mm-hmm. is a global platinum supply deficit of around 530 ounces projected for this year. There's, you know, also above-ground inventory. I mean, there's approximately about 9.2 million ounces on ground inventory. That represents about 14 mm-hmm. months worth of demand. You know, there's also this, you know, substitution risk. There is a widening price gap between platinum and palladium, which may also encourage a substitution in the, you know, much spoken about automotive industry for the catalytic converters. But, you know, nonetheless, I mean, you know, we're talking about all of these things, but if you still look at where the platinum price is at, I mean, I'm just looking at my screen, it's around 1380. It is relatively holding up quite well. So it just means that, you know, at this point in time, it's a wait and see approach. But like we've seen, you know, platinum over the past couple of years, if it does have quite a rally higher, the fall is very sharp when it does start coming downwards. So I think that's what the market is going to be looking at.
Yeah, I take your point, and certainly, I mean, there is driver in 40%. It's mid-year, and they're giving stellar returns, notwithstanding. Other commodities are doing well, but PGMs are leading the way. We'll leave it there. Mateta Tulari, Head FX Execution, RMB. Always appreciate the early morning insights. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Sehol Mantini. He's head of macro research at 91. Sehol, appreciate the time today. The dollar, we've seen a decade and a half. I mean, almost since the global financial crisis, it's kind of been one-way traffic in terms of, you know, dollar and dollar assets have been the trade for global markets.
Yeah, thanks. Good to be speaking with you. The dollar is like any other asset class. If flows go in, they catch a bid, the prices go up. When flows leave, it loses a bid, the price goes down. The flows in the last 10 to 12 years have been the product of four reinforcing cycles. There's geopolitics and economics. There's rate differentials, which are driven by things like demographics, investment, mm-hmm. productivity trends. There's investment flows. There's periodic FX adjustments. What we are seeing at the moment is all four of those factors appear to be changing at the same time. And it's very similar to the past dollar peaks, 1971, 1985, 2002. So we kind of think there's a chance the dollar, a better chance than there has been, that the dollar goes into a multi-year period of decline.
And this, I take your point. I mean, all four of them. I mean, you talk about, you know, U.S. fundamentals. I mean, we've seen that widening deficit. President Trump has got it as sort of number one on his agenda. Easy to talk about, perhaps a whole lot harder to do anything about. And that's with all four of these, it really is a case of they're kind of happening and they're almost in some senses perhaps unstoppable.
Yeah. So it's a question like, are they unstoppable, right? And I think a couple of things are unstoppable. I think the meeting that J.D. Vance, Vice President Vance, had with in Munich, you know, really scared Europeans.
Yeah.
And the Europeans then decided that they were going to kick off a multi-year defense investment cycle, right? And then we have that kind of finalized at the NATO summit. That's an incredible achievement. A lot of presidents have tried to get that in out of Europe, and Trump has. So I think that's unstoppable. I think what's more knowable is, like, our industry has benefited by allocating towards the U.S. cross-asset flows. If you were in the U.S., you made more money than if you were in Europe. Mm-hmm. And that has changed this year, right? This year, you would have made more money, especially in non-dollar currencies, if you were in Europe or if you were in the US. So the question, like, is that going to continue? I think there's a pretty good chance that continues, because historically, you've got 10 years of US outperformance, 10 years of EM or non-US outperformance. And this time, it's been like 14 years of US outperformance. So that cycle typically goes in line with the dollar. And, you know, I think there's a good chance it continues. I think the big question mark is, what are they does the US administration have a concerted plan to devalue the dollar? So historically, U.S. has had a really strong dollar policy, but Trump, Vance have started to say, oh, maybe we don't want a strong dollar. Maybe a strong dollar is bad for jobs in the Midwest. Maybe we actually want a weaker currency so we can export more. And if they start talking about that, as they have in the past, yep, and start saying we want capital controls, we want something else, that is a pretty good sign for markets.
And it's a case of, I mean, you know, as you say, we've seen them talking around a weaker dollar. And to be clear, we're not talking around the end of the dollar. We're not talking about the collapse of the dollar. This is just sort of the end of, as you say, some 10, 12, 14 years of unprecedented, or truthfully, actually precedented, dollar strength, that cycle which has continued for the last decade plus.
Exactly. I think there's a lot of breathless commentary. Everyone's, you know, has these big questions. Is it the end of the dollar? Is it the end of U.S. imperial supremacy? Whatever. I think just park all that. Mm-hmm. As an asset allocator, you know that there are dollar cycles. You know, we've had six since 1971, three up cycles, three down cycles. We think there's another bog standard down cycle. Yeah. And you can understand it. Now, if you're talking about like global currency change, you know, that happens once every 100 years. It's hard to forecast. It tends to be driven by major, major geopolitical events. You know, sterling, Britain had to go to the IMF three times in the 1970s. I mean, nobody's talking about the US going to the IMF, right? So just let's put everything in perspective. This is a pretty stranded dollar bear market, and we think it's overdue.
And some of it almost becomes, you're talking there around the fact that so far in 2025, it's been about EMs, it's been about Europe, it hasn't been about US assets for the first time in a very long time. That also becomes a little bit self-fulfilling. Fund managers look at this and think, hey, hang on a second, and they start shifting because they're, I hate the phrase, but chasing return.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, all of these factors have inertia, right?
Yeah.
So the fund manager inertia is exactly what you say. People nibble, and then the asset price goes up, and then they go, oh, maybe I should have allocated more to it, and then it becomes self-reinforcing. Same thing is true on growth differentials, right? You build a factory, the mm-hmm. factory does well. Maybe you think, oh, I should have put more capital there, I'm going to expand. And then that's the kind of slow process of reinforcement. Geopolitics, geoeconomics, pretty reinforcing.
Yeah.
A central bank decides that they're going to hold dollars, they're going to hold euros, and suddenly the euro does better. They decide that they're going to do more in that department. So a lot of these processes are deep, they are structural, and that's, by the way, why dollar cycles are much, much longer than other cycles. Like equity cycles, you know, how often do you get like a 20, 25% drawdown? You know, you can kind of map it out. It's about 7 to 8 years. Business cycles, how often do you get like a major decline in credit from peak? It's about 11 years. Dollar cycles are 15 to 18 years. They're very, very long. And that's because you've got these deep structural forces. And it's really important if you're an allocator, you know when the dollar cycle, you know, whether it's happening. Because if it's happening, a whole bunch of correlations and relationships change. Mm-hmm. And you have to be attuned to that. Otherwise, you're not going to be positioned as best as you can be in your portfolios.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's that reinforcement. And hence, it is that slow process. It doesn't turn on a dime, but it is certainly indications are that it is happening at this point. We leave it there. Shaun Martini, he's head of Macro Research 91. Appreciate the time. That's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Certainly we've seen, since the Trump presidency started back in January, we have had dollar weakness. Shanil makes a great point there around how it can continue. What's your take? Do you think we're going to see more dollar weakness over the many more years ahead? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give your money smoother returns for StanLib Asset Management. The StanLib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Luvo Gray, Managing Director at EC Internet. Luvo, appreciate the early morning time. We've got potential US tariffs set to go live in South Africa, 30% effective 1 August. There is potentially another 10% BRICS tariff that will also come in. This has potential to hit our tech sector. Do we have any sort of sense of how much business SA tech is doing with the US?
Now, good morning, Simon, and good morning to your listeners. So South Africa's tech sector, Simon, is deeply integrated with, you know, the United States. Mm-hmm. We are both as a buyer of U.S. tech and also as a growing exporter of digital goods and services. So in 2024 alone, South Africa's high-tech exports amounted to approximately about 2.4 billion, while total exports were to the value of which exceeded about 8.2 billion. So key exporters that that are majorly contributing to that to those numbers are Naspers, DataTech, BCX, and Altron. Naspers does a lot of licensing of digital services into the US. DataTech, which is part of the Westcon Group, they export quite a lot of networking solutions and systems integration. So we also have a growing base of startups, like your Yokos and your agritech companies, like your Airobotics, and quite a lot of health tech companies that are doing business with US based on partnerships and users. We also have, which is quite close to home, a friend of mine who's doing, who's developed, cameras, AI, based cameras, which are monitoring, telco towers, which are, a key client is American Tower Company. So those entities are being hit quite hard. And this trade relationship, I think, isn't just symbolic, Simon. It's quite material. And these numbers reflect real jobs, startups, and infrastructure in South Africa.
And to your point, the numbers are real. I mean, 8 billion is a giant number. And the point is that, I mean, my understanding of the tech industry is that much of this is really, really razor-thin margins. These aren't NVIDIAs with 60% margins. These are highly competitive spaces, and margins are thin. There is no space to absorb some of that tariff.
100%, Simon. So this, our sector is already really, really under pressure. Between you talk about exchange rate volatility, infrastructure costs, and also licensing, our margins are seriously razor thin. Tariffs now add an additional 10 to 15% hike on key inputs, and most of us can't just absorb that. You can't pass on that to a township customer paying 5 rand a day for Wi-Fi. You also can't downgrade quality, so now you are forced to cut growth, delay rollouts, and pause hiring. That's the reality for most of the small internet service providers in South Africa and tech companies.
It is, and a lot of them, as you say, it is small. And it's also, I mean, this is, I mean, you mentioned, for example, some of them, like Yoko, they no longer sort of startup; they are fully a successful brand now. But this is going to be about funding for startups, VCs, etc. It's going to hit a wider breadth of the train, and that has longer term implication as well.
100%. As you know, Simon, the United States is the largest source of, venture capital funding for most African tech startups, especially in your areas like your financial technology, your health tech, and also mobility. So these tariffs send quite alarming signals, signals of instability or protectionism, and then that type of language scares off capital. So already quite a number of deal volumes in Africa are down. And tariffs will, further cool, investor sentiment, particularly for early stage ventures. So, and it's not just about capital. Many of our startups rely on US-based platforms, cloud credits, accelerator programs, and also enterprise customers. So if relations continue to chill, I think the entire ecosystem, will definitely suffer.
Solution, and I appreciate that my glibly saying to you what the solution is not an easy answer by any stretch. I mean, we can say to the president, please, Mr. President, go chat to Trump again. We can try and find other markets. I mean, neither of those are really very viable, and particularly because we need a solution ASAP. I mean, ideally by 1 August.
100%. That's true. I think for now, we're quite dependent on US-based technologies, and software, most hardware, and also cloud infrastructure. I think, but this moment is a bit of a wake-up call for us as South Africa and, the global South. I think we need to build local hardware capacity, and we need to promote African cloud providers and also support more open source alternatives where possible, because this tariff is not only directed to South Africa, it's directed to BRICS aligned companies and countries. So as a BRICS bloc, I think we need to come up with a solution where we look at alternative sources of technologies which we can integrate within our own entity so that we can make the technology environment in South Africa thrive more.
Yeah, maybe I take your point there. I mean, BRICS is a block. Let's use that block as well. We'll leave it though there. That's Oliver Gray, Managing Director, EC Internet. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. We were chatting with Nick Kunze yesterday. He, of course, from Sunlam Private Wealth. U.S. earnings season, it is kicking off today with banks. A bunch more of the banks reporting tomorrow as well. The question we asked was, what do you expect from these results? Two-thirds said fair, not awesome. That's probably right on the money. The rest was split between knock it out the park or we'll see more weakness. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobokle, Seren, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, state of the ETF market.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.